There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realize that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Longworth.
We are continuing our sermon series on critical race theory and asking the question, is slavery America's original sin? As we have shown in previous sermons where we looked at the Bible and also at true and accurate accounts of history. And one thing that we have seen from the Bible, Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." And how do we know the truth? Well, first of all, by abiding in His Word. John 8, 31 and 32, "If you abide in My Word, you will be My disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And then from Romans chapter 1, we also learn that some people know the truth, but suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And so this is important to realize when you look at history and when you look at what people say and who you listen to and whether you should believe someone or not. It's important to remember that there are some who don't love truth and are actually suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. So we have actually looked at wallbuilders.com. They have a lot of resources. Not only do they have a lot of resources and a lot of information about history, they actually own a lot of the documents from America's founding era. In fact, over 120,000 documents are owned by Wall Builders, and these include letters, Bibles. We actually saw, I believe, the Bible of one of the famous preachers. If you watch this video by David Barton, "Debunking the 1619 Project: Is America Racist?" You can actually see some of the Bibles. They actually show the a painting, because they didn't have pictures back then, but a painting of Lemuel Haynes, who was a famous black preacher who had a white congregation. He was actually the first black man in America to receive a degree of higher education. So we talked about some of those heroes, Harry Hoosier, also John Morant, Lemuel Haynes. We talked about some of these, Wentworth Cheswold, and some of the others that we talked about that last week. Some of these heroes, really, of the Revolutionary era. One of the things that's interesting, and we didn't talk about everything, you can actually watch them. We'll link in the description on this sermon on our church website, covenanttabernacle.com. Also, our Facebook page, Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center, and as well on our YouTube channel, Covenant Tabernacle. We'll include the link to that David Barton video. But he does in there include many other examples, historical examples of blacks in this time that actually were fighting for freedom in America. They were fighting for on the side of America, or the colonies who would become America, who would become the United States of America, against England. One of those, interesting, I'll just mention it today briefly, one of those actually was involved in a plot, a successful plot, to capture the second-in-command of Britain, because our second-in-command had been captured, and we needed to capture the British second-in-command to actually do a prisoner swap. And he was a part of what really would become, really unofficially, the first special ops campaign ever carried out in America. And he was a part of that, and he was a Black patriot. Blacks actually served in the army, in the colonial army, in the Revolutionary Army, and they served actually longer than whites. I believe about 9 times longer than the average white. But what we're going to look at today, we're going to look at some of the differences or some of the prejudices that existed in America, not only post slavery, but even in slavery. We're going to actually see that some of these, they really weren't racial, completely racial. There was actually quite a bit of that prejudice that was based on behavior. And in doing so, we're going to actually look at the book. We're going to actually look at the book Black Rednecks and White Liberals. Now, that's kind of a funny name, but it's by Thomas Sowell, who was a Black economist. He was actually hired as a professor at Harvard before affirmative action. So before the time when employers were encouraged to hire Blacks and actually were actually even needed to hire a certain percentage of Blacks, he actually was a Harvard professor. And it's because he knew his stuff. He really knew what was happening. But he starts out his book, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, with this quote. Listen to this, and I want you to just envision who the author might have been talking about. These people are creating a terrible problem in our cities. They can't or won't hold a job. They flaunt the law constantly and neglect their children. They drink too much, and their moral standards would shame an alley cat. For some reason or another, they absolutely refuse to accommodate themselves with any kind of decent, civilized life. So this comment was made in 1956 in Indianapolis. Now, if you were to guess the group of people that this comment was made about, especially in today's society where we hear so much about discrimination, we hear so much about racism, we hear so much about the racism that has happened, and not only racism, but systemic racism, you would probably think that the group of people that the person was talking about was actually Blacks, but that's not the case. This quote was actually talking about poor whites from the South, and the people of Indianapolis were not unique in this respect. A 1951 survey in Detroit found that white Southerners living there were considered undesirable by 21% of those surveyed, compared to 13% who ranked Blacks the same way. In the late 1940s, a Chicago employer said frankly, "I told the guard at the gate, at the plant gate, to tell the hillbillies that there were no openings." When poor whites from the South moved into northern cities to work in war plants during the Second World War, occasionally a white Southerner would find that a flat or an unfurnished room had just been rented when the landlord heard his Southern accent. One of the things that you'll find in if you read this book, and I would encourage you to look at this book. I was actually introduced to this book by my mom, Margaret Longworth, who actually used this book in her sociology classes in college. The book, again, is Black Rednecks and White Liberals by Thomas Sowell, who's a Black economist. Now, in this book, by the way, he looks and really in all of his books, he looks at things from an economic standpoint. He's not really looking at things from a biblical standpoint. He's looking at things from an economic standpoint. But one of the things that's interesting, or several things that are interesting that I learned from this book, is that the people in the South, in fact, the people of all parts of the country, our country, when they immigrated, typically they immigrated from the same area to the same area. So in other words, the people from Britain would have immigrated to the same portion of America. And the people from let's say Scotland would come to the same portion of America typically. The people from Germany would go to a different portion of America. The people from that lived in the South, the whites that lived in the South, they actually came from the British Isles. They were areas between Britain and actually Ireland or Scotland. Many of them came from the Scottish Highlands. Their area did not have, the area that they came from did not have a strong central government. Because of that, there wasn't strong law enforcement. So to survive, they had to be willing to defend themselves, defend their family, defend their property, and not only defend themselves and their family and their property, but also to defend their reputation. And we'll get into that. You'll see how this carries over when they came to America. It's interesting. The slave owners, before they came to America, were called rednecks in the area where they came from. They were in an area where the people were not well educated. And many of the characteristics that they brought to America, they then, when they started owning slaves, they then transferred those characteristics or those behaviors to those who were slaves. Very interesting. But the prejudices of the 1940s and 1950s didn't just start right then. It preceded then. And actually in Pennsylvania, immigrants from the Scottish Highlands were encouraged to settle in western Pennsylvania, where they could be a buffer to the Indians and they wouldn't bother the people that already lived in Pennsylvania. And in fact, because of their cantankerousness and how they were so aggressive, they could actually, their aggressiveness would actually be a benefit against the Indians. In the South, when a wealthy plantation owner moved into the South, and he had come from a different part of Europe before coming to the United States, which again, early on, when we were talking in the founding era, they weren't even the United States, but at this point they were the United States, or, some of them actually came to the United States, this area before we were actually the United States. But anyway, they would often pay much more than if they had a neighbor that was from this area where the people really didn't behave well, that was a neighbor, the wealthy man would actually offer to buy his land for much more than what it was worth so that he wouldn't have to put up with him as a neighbor. So they came, again, from no central government. They had to defend their family. They had to defend their property. They had to defend their honor. They had a propensity to violence. There was one account that Thomas Sowell refers to in his book, and where a Southerner was hired to do a project, a rehab project on a home. Maybe, I'm not sure, some sort of construction project. And he drug his feet. He was, one of the things that happened quite often in the South is there was a lot of laziness. And so he hadn't gotten around to doing it. So the homeowner, hired someone else to do the job. And what he actually found is the man heard about this, came to his house, and he said, "Tomorrow morning, I'm going to come with 20 men with rifles, and it's going to be your life or my life." These types of interactions were commonplace. because he had been dissed. He had been, if we were to use, you know, more modern terminology or modern vernacular, fighting was often rough and tumble. In fact, there was one instance where there were two men that gathered to fight, and people from the area gathered around them and were cheering them on, and they asked whether they wanted to fight fair or rough and tumble. And the people, the two men, said they wanted to fight rough and tumble, and the crowd cheered, and they did. They fought rough and tumble, and the guy that lost the fight ended up losing his nose, losing his ears, having his eyes gouged out. The man who won the fight was injured, but at the end of the fight, he was hoisted above the other men and carried around, in a triumphal celebration, because he had been able to actually defeat this other man. There were times where people would get into an argument, and the one person would kill another person, and they would go to jury trial, and the jury would say, well, you know, in the same circumstance, I would do the same thing, and they would acquit the person. And another thing that happened quite often, this led to duels, where, you know, you've probably seen this on TV, and from the Wild Wild West, where the men, you know, get their, you know, they're back to back, and they walk 20 paces, turn around, and, you know, whoever's the quickest draw wins the fight, wins the duel, and the other person actually is put to death. Duels were so common in this period that most politicians in the South had actually participated in duels, and obviously they won, which is why they were still alive. It was not only politicians that participated in duels, also newspaper editors participated in duels so much that there were political cartoons that showed newspaper editors with a pen in one hand and a gun in the other hand, and they were constantly involved in this. We hear a lot of, and we do have a tragic history of lynching in this country. And after the Civil War and after the emancipation of slaves, many of those of Black descent were victims of lynching. And this is horrible that this happened. But lynching had actually been going on in America for over 100 years before Blacks were lynched. You see, when Blacks were slaves, a slave owner would not lynch his own slave, because slaves cost a lot of money, and slaves were valuable property. One of the things, by the way, that's interesting, and Thomas Sowell, you know, he does say clearly, and we'll say this clearly, I'll say this clearly too, that the way that slaves were treated in America, the fact that slaves were treated better in America than in other countries, the fact that slavery existed in other countries, as we have shown in some of the previous sermons, the fact that slavery wasn't only Black on or white on Black, the fact that some Blacks owned slaves, and the fact that some whites were slaves, and the fact that in fact even more whites were enslaved worldwide at the time than Blacks were enslaved, doesn't make slavery right, and it doesn't make any of this right. But Blacks were actually treated, slaves were actually treated better than Irish immigrants, for instance. In fact, slave owners, when there was a job that was too dangerous for them to have their slaves do, because they didn't want to lose their slave, they would hire an Irish immigrant, because if he died doing the job, well, that was on him. He received the money for doing the job, and they would still have their slaves. But lynching actually existed long before the slaves were emancipated, and the very first lynching victims were whites. There was a reckless nature that happened in the South, and this made it so that those who were traveling the Mississippi River by boat it was actually more dangerous to travel on the Mississippi River than it was to travel across the Atlantic. Now, this is still in a time where they were sailing many times across the Atlantic. So you can imagine, and it was still dangerous to cross the Atlantic, but it was even more dangerous to travel on the Mississippi River. Why? Because when the boats would get on the Mississippi River, the people would encourage the captains of the boats to race. Sometimes at gunpoint, if the captain didn't want to race, they would hold the gun to him, the pistol to him, and then he would be obliged to race. They would pull the safety valves out of the boilers and overheat the boilers so that their boat would go faster. There was one account that Thomas Sowell recounts where a woman had gone up north. She had bought a winter's worth of bacon and pork and other types of animal meat, and her boat and this other boat were racing, and they were cheering on, and they were asking the captain to go faster, and they had pulled the safety off of the boiler, and finally she gets her slave to throw the bacon and the pork into the boiler, and that heats it up even more, so that their boat actually went past the other boat, to which everyone on the boat started cheering as the other boat blew up and splinters were going all over the place. And in the rubble, you could hear the woman saying, "It's my bacon did it. It's my bacon." This is the way that the Southerners lived. Cleanliness was another thing that wasn't very big in the South. Politicians, there was one politician who actually did something different than what, you know, today we see politicians kissing children and so on. But there was one politician that made a name for himself because he would sit the kids on his lap and he would pick through their hair to look for red bugs and lice and pick them out. And that endeared him to their parents, who would vote for him. One of the things that's interesting is that the reason that the different areas that the people came from made such a big difference in their behavior was because there wasn't rapid forms of communication. You know, today we can turn on the television and we can see news from across the world. If something big happens, we can see it. Even when there's war, a lot of times we have reporters that are on the ground and we can actually hear and find out. We may not know exactly what was happening, but in time, we'll actually find out, and we can actually have people from other parts of the country come to our country and vice versa. So we have a lot of interaction and intermingling that didn't exist back then. So the people from these areas were very unique and very different. Later on, though, the people from the Scottish Highlands that didn't come to the United States, they actually, as they started assimilating with other people, they started to value education more. They started to learn more characteristics, or they started to be more clean. One person that actually visited the Scottish Highlands noted that on that visit, people in the Scottish Highlands no longer threw sewage out their windows. Now, you know, you can imagine walking down the street, there's a two-story building, all of a sudden, sewage comes flying out the window and might hit you. That would be a pretty bad thing. Well, those people actually cleaned up their act, but in America, those rednecks that had come from this area, they actually hadn't cleaned up their act. Language and education was another thing that these people held, you know, they actually spoke a very broken English, so much so that some people from the North couldn't even communicate with people from the South. Their religious oratory, their music, their dancing was very, very vibrant and colorful. And the types of, and you probably have heard in some whites, but also a lot of blacks actually will have that rhythmic, melodic characteristic when they're preaching. That all came from the slave owners. The slave owners, that's the way their church services were. And we already talked about the laziness. So a lot of these attitudes and these behaviors actually were learned by the slaves from the slave owners. And it's kind of like, you know, one of the things that the Bible talks about, you know, the Bible says in Deuteronomy that, the Bible says in the Ten Commandments that God holds those who guilty, who actually sin, and he holds them guilty and accountable to the third and fourth generation. And one of the things that does happen sometimes is that some of the worst characteristics of a parent sometimes are passed down to his children, and their children pass them down to their children, and so on and so forth. And that is called by many people a generational curse. And even as many in the South have actually done away with many of these bad behaviors, and many who are black, who were former slaves, who their ancestors were former slaves, have done away and gotten rid of this behavior, there we do see some of these behaviors and some of these characteristics actually in the inner city among the poorest black in America today. It is important that we realize that not all discrimination that has happened in America has been racial. Much of it has been behavioral based. And certainly stereotyping is not something that we should do. It's not something that we should allow. It's not something that we should tolerate. We should treat all men as if they are created in God's image, because they are. We are God's image bearers, and because we are God's image bearers, our lives are valuable, and every person deserves protection. Every person deserves the same opportunities, regardless of their race, regardless of any type of upbringing. We need to give everyone the same opportunities. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and give you peace.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com, where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realize that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
He's turned my mourning into dancing again. He's lifted my sorrows. I can't stay silent. I must sing, for His joy has sorrows. I can't stay silent. I must sing, for His joy has come. Where there once was only hurt, He gave His healing hand. Where there once was only pain, He brought comfort like a friend. I feel the sweetness of His love piercing my darkness. I see the bright and molten